Welcome back to Path to Glory, the Warhammer Underworlds podcast that focuses on competitive gaming, player development, and community growth. In this episode, we will be discussing Zarbag's Gits, specifically how our guest, which I'll introduce in a second, did really well with them at the Warhammer World Mini Clash in June, getting third place with only one game loss and zero match losses. But before we do that, we want to thank our patrons who help keep the lights on. Thank you to everyone who supports us. If you're interested in supporting the podcast monetarily, please check us out at patreon.com/path to glory. If that's not possible, we still appreciate the listens and the ratings. This is your boy, Aman Kusro, and I'm joined by my guest today, Niccolo Cipani. How's it going, Nick?
I'm doing great. You're doing really good with my name.
I appreciate that. I mean, we've been friends for like 3 years now.
So. It is, but like there are still Italian people that doesn't know to pronounce it as good as you.
So. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. Also known as the Italian Stallion. That's going to be your nickname for the episode.
Everyone in Italy is known as that. So,
really? What is another nickname that's like a play off that, but not Italian Stallion?
Sorry again?
Like, what's another nickname I can give you if it's too common?
It is too common. I don't know. Nick is fine, usually.
Yeah.
We're like Team Cavalli, which is horses. So you want to call me horse, that's fine as well.
I mean, I think Stallion just sounds better than horse. I'm going to call you the Italian Stallion.
All right.
This one time, because for the rest of the episode, you'll probably still be Nick.
Yeah.
So what's been up, man? How are things in the great country of Italy?
They're pretty hot. Like, climate-wise and political state-wise.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we have, like, a government crisis. I know it's not shocking. Like, we have one every year. It's like Westerosi season. You don't know where they're going to happen, but they're going to be, like, huge and impactful.
That's wild. I feel like, and this is not a political podcast, so we're not going to get into details there, but I think I find it really interesting that there are so many political crises happening. It's a scary time, I think, for the global.
I mean, if I want to spit my two cents about it without being too political, I think probably it's worldwide that people get consensus for like 2 years tops, and then it disappears. Whoever you are, whatever your political ideas are, I don't think anyone is more popular than 2 years. After 2 years, you're not good enough.
Yeah, except Obama.
Yeah, Obama. But Obama was
everybody loved him. That's true. Yeah. I guess now you're right. That's fair. I'm in Texas, so a lot of people I know still love Trump. So
yeah,
people love who they love, and they're entitled to do so. And I support everybody's right and choice to love whoever they want to. That's right. Well, speaking of nostalgia, a very recent nostalgia, I would say, we got the preview for Hexvane's Hunters. Mm-hmm. On Warhammer community, and I wanted to get your initial thoughts as Hexvane's Hunters plunge into the dark heart of the Nether Maze.
So, first impression.
What are your like? Yeah,
I think I'm gonna love them. Like, I do love the concept. I do love the sculpts. I think the miniatures are good. I was like zooming in like with Jolson Darrok miniature for Curse City. That was the Witch Hunter in there. And the other two miniatures they made like last year for Witch Hunter were pretty good. So I really dig the style. I think they're pretty good. And also, I can't wait to play them. Like, I was an avid Godsworn Hunt player. I think probably they're going to be same vibes about it. I think they're going to be like frail aggro warband that wants to kill and doesn't matter to get killed.
I love that. That would probably be my inclination as well. I mean, they're armed with guns, axes, crossbows, even two faithful doges, which I'm pretty excited about. I think the dogs look really cool.
They can be a Texas warband. Like, no, you tell it like that. Like rifles, yeah. Dogs.
They exactly. Axes.
Axes.
Yeah, I love that. This is great. This is honestly, any warband with guns and dogs, I'm a fan of. That's why I like. Everyone loves Grawl from the Godsworn. You mentioned them.
Yeah, it was my.
I still think Profiteers
and like calculated risk guy.
That's right. Kill himself, yep. Martyred, calculated risk. Makes sense. Yeah. Shout out to Steel City Underworlds. I know that no longer create content, but I talked to Mike here and there, and I think Mike, Tom, and Ollie were like the ones who created, or the first time I had seen it and popularized the whole kill your own dog and get martyred and stuff to get upgrades to inspire your
warband. I don't know if it came like from Tom, that's playing Godsworn, or from Mike and his Skaven Suicide deck.
The Skaven Suicide deck was a wild one.
That was fun.
That was crazy. Yeah, I'm pretty excited. If I had to pick a favorite miniature, I'm probably going to pick... and his name is Quiet Pock, and the reason we know that is because it was mentioned on the reveal stream. That it was called the Summer Skirmish Preview Online by Warhammer. And so they actually mentioned most of the characters by name. And I just love... I love range stuff. If you've listened to the podcast for a while, you'll know that I... Like, Legolas is my favorite Lord of the Rings character, though Boromir is a very close second. Sometimes Boromir eclipses Legolas in terms of, you know, the tragic hero. But anything where you can just, like, shoot stuff and look cool doing it is my jam. And he's got a crossbow with a bomb on it.
Yep. Yeah, that's going to be fun. That's pretty cool. I do like that. I also like the leader, to be honest. I think that's a cool miniature.
Haskell Hexbane, his card was revealed.
His card was pretty cool. Probably not that exciting about, like, that one damage, only range 3 attack was... Man, but I guess they can. Maybe they're going to have some tricks in their sleeves.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it's a very... He doesn't look like the most imposing leader, I'll say that much. However, I think the card art's really cool. I like that he has Grievous on his pistol, and... Price of Victory reaction looks pretty cool. I'm looking forward to seeing how that works with the rest of the warband. And we'll definitely cover that on this podcast. You know, we do our reviews. But yeah, I'm pretty excited for them. I think the aesthetic is sick.
Can you imagine playing them like in relic format and having ready for action? And so you like get one of those reactions to put an upgrade and then react to it with ready for action. That would be so nasty.
That would 100% be nasty. Let me ask you this, though. Who plays Relic? Do you know anyone?
I don't think. Probably some guys, like, in their home that play sometimes. They play Relics, and they don't know that they're playing Relics, bro.
You know, it's really funny. I remember I went to, I think it was, like, Gen Con 2019. There's a guy who just popped up, and I guess he didn't realize there was a far list.
Mm-hmm.
So he had like a bunch of, he had like the banned cards, because this was Shadespire and Nightvault were both legal. And it was like the one where you can just run away when someone charges you.
Quick Thinker,
yeah. Yeah, and I remember seeing it and I was like, it was the table next to me and I was like, oh wow, you know, I forgot this card exists. And my opponent, his opponent rather, like bless his heart, I guess didn't realize it was... like banned. And so he kept looking at it and was like, wow, I can't believe I've never seen this card. And like after like a couple, you know, things, they eventually figured it out and called the judge, which was really funny. But yeah, like some of those cards back in the day to, you know, bring the conversation full circle.
Because you jumped in like after Shadespire, if I remember correctly.
I jumped in towards the, well, so I started out at the beginning of Shadespire.
Okay.
But then I moved. So I didn't play with Chosen Axes, Spyclaw Swarm.
Mm-hmm.
But then I rejoined when Farstriders came out. Maybe like a month after them and the Fiends came out.
Yeah, so end of
and that's fight. When I really got started. Yeah, that's when I really gave it my all, if you will. Yeah. You started when?
I started when you moved out, basically. I started when Fire Slayer and Skaven. No, I started before, the expansion before. So like the Iron Skull and the Sepulchral Guard.
Okay. So yeah, I remember.
There. And then my first world tournament was the day after they released Skaven and Fire Slayers, and I got crushed. I probably was like last or second to last. Yeah, and it was a ton of fun. So I would say, okay, I want to be better at this. I want to learn how to play good.
Yeah, I remember when my first tournament I ever went to, I just like cobbled up a deck. This was before I moved. Mm-hmm. So it was just four warbands, and I played Reavers because I liked the aesthetic of it. And it was crazy. Orcs like tabled everybody that day. Iron Skulls boys, because back in the day it was just charge into each other.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And like the orcs could just take a hit more often than not. And then they would, and then Iron Skull and was it Bone Splitter? Bone Splitter would just kill everything.
Yeah, probably Bone Splitter. I don't remember doing it, but yeah. The second guy.
Yeah. The guy with the big axe. Yeah. That was fun. Those were the days of a simpler.
Those are the days. Like, I remember my local scene were dominated by a guy to play support guard. And he was like, yeah, I scored like 5 objectives. And I scored 12 glories. And I was like, oh, this guy's crazy. Nobody can do that.
Yeah, I had a buddy also. His name is Raymond. Shout out to him. He lives in the area. He's probably like the only other person that still plays on the worlds around me consistently. And he loves Sepulchral Guard. Yeah. So, Nick, I wanted to take some time to, before we get into Sleeve It or Leave It, to kind of take some time to for you to just share maybe your Underworlds experience, which we've got into a little bit. But, you know, for those maybe first-time listeners or listeners who haven't heard you on the podcast before, even though I believe this may be your third or fourth.
Yeah, I think I was a bunch. Probably my fourth.
Yeah, you've been on here quite a bit.
Yeah.
I think it's the fourth. And so just wanted to get into what you like to do and how you like to play. So we heard about when you joined the game. How is your scene in Italy?
I don't know the scene in Italy. Like, I was living in another city, which was smaller. We were like 8 players total.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like 4 warbands, then 6 warbands and stuff like that. So it wasn't really a scene, but basically was, I think, what everyone was playing. So basically aggro, because Gray Concussion was a card that existed, and so no point of playing objectives.
Yeah, but it's a good one.
I suck at aggro. Like, I tried to play Iron Skull Boys, I tried to play Magor Fiends, and always came up short. So the guy that I told you about suggested me to try to play objectives to better understand positioning and gaming again, and I basically never looked back. Like, I learned, I think, the game a lot better by that, and basically a lot of the warbands I play are objective focused or objective oriented to some sort. I do like go aggro a bit. As I said, I'm a Gods Renown player. I do like them. I do like some aggro like that, but I think if I have to pick a style for me, I think it's old objective.
Yeah. I think you have always been someone who's really been interested in that playstyle. I know that we've played a lot online. Mm-hmm. And done a lot of practice games together and stuff. And by the way, still want to thank you for telling me to run
Proud Runner.
Proud Runner in the Crimson Court deck. That came out. That came up a lot, and it was really helpful. The style is just such an interesting one, and it's one that I understand truly, but it's never been a lot of fun about it because I tend to lean aggro sometimes pretty hard. And so would you say for those people who don't necessarily play objective-based warbands or styles, like, would you recommend that they try it? Because if anything, when I started doing it, as you mentioned, it helped me become a better aggro player.
Yeah. As I said, I think it's a great school for Underworld. Like, you understand positioning, deployment, feature check on deployment, which is also like a huge part of the game, which is overlooked because you do it like 10 seconds at the beginning of the game and you want to world die, so maybe you overlook it. But yeah, definitely do it. Definitely get some practice. You understand like how important it is to prioritize scoring over killing, to defend crucial targets, to position yourself, doing, and you do understand also like importance of some things that become overlooked, like in aggro. Like speed, it's quite important in aggro, but you don't realize speed like when you like missing 1x to reach that objective. So pushes, speed, those are a crucial part of the game and crucial part of aggro as well. But until you don't play like a hold objective, you don't fully realize it.
Yeah, well said. I completely agree. Now your local scene, I understand that you have like 6 or 7 like of your good friends.
No, there was in the past. Like right now I'm in Florence. We have like Florida.
Oh, you moved local. Away from.
Yeah, I moved away for work. And now I'm in Florence, which is a bigger city. And we have like huge community, like regular 12, 14 players.
That's awesome.
To show up at events. We try to do pretty successfully. Now it's summer, so everybody's on holiday. We're taking a bit of a halt because everybody's like seaside, something stuff that you do in Italy when it's like a lot of degrees up there. But basically, we run two tournaments per month. We try to do like a skirmish on a Friday night and maybe a championship for best of three on a Saturday evening or afternoon. And right. So I think the community is involved. Like, you can find people that plays on local stores basically once every week. And we're willing to get people in. We're pretty friendly. Like, we usually do pizzas together before the tournament. So I do love my community. It's like the thing I like the most about this game right now. So
yeah, same. I would say that my favorite part about it is like making, you know, the relationships that I have with you. You know, like, we've never met, but we talk all the time. Yeah. And you live in Italy and I live in, you know, the States, which is really cool. Last question, and I have to ask this, and you've answered this to me privately, but for our wider groups here, what's up with the horse helmets or the horsemen?
So
you guys do that a lot.
Yeah, people ask me about it at the Clash. So basically it all started with a friend of ours that usually call us like horse to each other, like a nickname, like initial nickname, which is unusual. Like, nobody calls everybody like that, but he calls horse everyone. Like
instead of bro or dude, yeah. He's like, what's up, horse?
Like horse, which is in Italian, it's cavallo. Yeah, cavallo.
Oh, little. Like a cavalier, like a
yeah, cavaliere becomes from that. So,
oh, okay, cool.
So basically, when we make a group, one of the guys say, yeah, we're like Team Cavalli because every one of us is a horse. And so when we went to the first Clash, that was like in January 2020, the last one before COVID and the world went in shittier, we decided to get some masks from Amazon, like cheap masks, and we get a shirt design and we rock that style since. So every tournament, like,
I love it.
We're going to the mask. With
Team Cavalli.
Yeah. And it's also, I think it's fun when a guy with a horse mask goes to receive an award.
Yeah, I saw the picture of you. You won the Bugsman's Clash, which was cool with Grimwatch. But that was a really cool thing to see. Fun fact about Nick is that he's a huge NBA fan.
I am, yeah.
Like, I have talked to you. It's been like evening or nighttime my time, and you're up, you know, and you're 7 hours ahead of me because you're watching. Like, you were watching the playoffs and the finals. And so, you know, you're a big Phoenix Suns fan.
Guilty as charged.
How did that come about, just very quickly?
I really don't know. I don't remember how, because like when I was a kid, I know NBA existed, but I really never like watched the game. I wasn't able to. So we got like hats and shirts and whatever, and video games and stuff like that. So I don't remember how, but I remember that I was a Phoenix Suns fan for reasons. I don't know if like the random team selector picked it, or because Barkley was in the cover of a game or something like that. And when I was in high school, I started to like follow basketball more and starting to watch games. And I don't know, I remember I was a Phoenix Suns, so I started to follow them. And luckily for me, there was the Steve Nash era, 7 seconds or less Suns. So that was
That's
a
right.
lot of fun to watch. And I got hooked. And like, we're running a podcast in Italy. We are at the 12th year that we do that podcast, 12th season. That's a lot. And yeah, I'm a pretty avid NBA fan. So,
and this podcast, you cover NBA. Yeah.
And we have like really deep coverage, like CBA analysis, cap analysis, stuff like that. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That is impressive. I didn't even know that about you. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, cool. So that's a little bit about Nick. Super cool guy. I highly encourage you reach out to him, and he'll be able to tell you how to do that towards the end of the episode. But we're going to move on to our next segment, which is usually called Sleeve It or Leave It. But then Nick made a joke at the end of the pre-show, and I think this is probably a better name for this segment one time only, though it depends on how often we'll reuse it. But it's going to be called Restrict It or Don't. And the card we're going to talk about today is called Dark Inversion. Mm-hmm. Now, for those of you who may not be necessarily familiar with the card, this is a gambit. And it says, pick two future tokens in empty hexes. Place each future token in the hex the other future token was in when you pick them. And this idea for this card came about because I was playing actually against Zach who is my co-host on the show. And we were playing for the Vassal League, and I was playing Gitz, which is great, because I started playing Gitz to help prepare for this episode, and then, you know, we got delayed a couple weeks, but I'm glad we're getting it done now. And he was playing Creepers, and I was like, oh boy, you know, if Creepers start going hot, it's pretty bad for Gitz because they just farm them. And so he blows me out game one, but then in game two with Snurk and some cool shenanigans, I blow him out. And so in game three, you know, I'm like, hey, I really hope I win this roll-off. And he ends up winning the roll-off, so he takes three objectives because, you know, why wouldn't you? And so in that situation, I decide to longboard him because Snurk in a narrow hallway can be pretty dangerous. Okay. And I know that he's going to be the beatdown.
That's interesting.
And so, yeah, so that's what happened. He longboarded me in game two, and it worked so well. I was like, I might as well just try it again.
Like, honestly, right? I never longboarded myself.
Really?
No, I'll always play, like,
super wide.
Super wide. Probably, like, offset in some edge cases. We can talk about later.
We definitely will. But this was the scenario that we were in. And so I worked really, really hard. Because, you know, he's going to pick an object or a board with a block X because he can run through it and stuff because Creepers have that card. And so I worked really hard to make sure that he would be forced to place his third in my territory, which he ended up having to do. And I was like, great. You know, I was able to kind of turn the advantage slightly more balanced rather than just strictly in his favor and me running up and getting murdered by spears. And then his opening hand, he gets Dark Inversion and he just steals one of my objectives. So my whole game plan kind of shattered, and I found it to be quite a back-breaking experience for me because I felt like I was really proud of like the positioning and that game that we played, and to have it felt like it was, I suppose, stolen in a way. Maybe it could use a better term there, but felt really frustrating. And I think while we still had a great game, it certainly forced me to be more aggressive than I think my deck really wanted to be at the time. And I course corrected and I put in more aggro cards in my deck, but I had used your deck as a basis, right? Because we had talked about it after you had performed so well. And so with that background, I started reaching out to people in Vassal, the Discord. And I was like, hey guys, like, what are your thoughts on the card? And it seemed like there was a lot of mixed reactions, but then as the conversation, and I think it became more aware, I started getting more and more tidbits here and there where, like, I think this card is really good. I'm running it in my aggro decks to counter objective placement, things like that. And now I feel like it's a really ubiquitous card. So, like, you know, if you look at the history of the far list, they always target cards that are popular and strong. And sometimes also, you know, they hit cards that can provide a negative player experience, also known as NPE, like Daylight Robbery. And so I feel like this card kind of has traits of all three, but that's just my opinion. But as someone who's used this card to great effect and as someone who's benefited from it and probably even, you know, suffered from it in the same similar fashion that I have, I wanted to really get your thoughts. Do you think this card is worth being restricted?
So I think we have to sort of contextualize the card to some similar cards. Not by effect, because I don't think there was like a similar effect to that. But to, let's say, impact on the game or popularity or choose. So, for example, I don't take that card in my Grimwatch deck at all because I want to be in my opponent's territory. I usually play all my objectives in there anyway. So if you want to bring another one, be my guest. The more, the merrier. Instead, with the Gitz, I won't like take it out of my deck for anything else. Like, that is a staple card for me because, as you said, I can have three every time and I run Supremacy in my deck, so three was a must. And sometimes I have four, which is even better. And also as, like, the gacha moment for sometimes, like, people go counter and go on the feature token that you swapped to counter my Infestation. And when they dealt, they realized it's a cover X instead of a objective X, and they were like, wait, what happened? I went and I was like, yeah, remember this card? This happened. So that is some, let's call it both fun for me and somewhat of a negative player experience for the other, but I think that might happen. So some similar cards to that are, I think, Inspired Attack, because I think it's a really strong card that some warbands absolutely want to take, and some warbands don't need it, don't want it, don't take it. So this is a similarity I see. Another one I see, it's like Restless... I don't remember the name. It was in B-Script.
Restless Prize,
correct.
That you could just take, move it to.
Yeah, because I think it's a card that basically counters by itself, and that's it. And this is the same. Like, sometimes you have, in the match you play the card, the opponent has to play the card exactly after you, and the game is stalled, and present. So basically you take it to counter it. And I do think Restless Prize was overwhelmingly popular because it was like a game changer. It was like, could swing totally. Like, at some point you have three, the next power step, you don't have three anymore, and your opponent has, because you switched an objective. I think Restless Prize got better with the restrictions, because people have to make a choice. Like, I want to spend one of my restricted slot for the card that is powerful, and if I play it's a powerful thing, but I also use like one of my precious three spots for it. So I guess this is pretty much the similar case. Even if some warbands won't find a place for it anywhere, anytime, for some warbands I think it's going to be interesting to, like, I think this is worth spending one of them. So yeah, I think I am in favor of restricting it, just because make it more interesting to me.
Yeah, well said, and I think that's a really good comparison. I think for me, like, a card restriction gives you that choice that you've already mentioned, which I think is really relevant. And in some cases, as you've mentioned, you know, if one person decides to spend their restricted slot on that card, then the other opponent might not have it because they don't think it's worth it in their deck. And it can, in some cases, make the card even stronger, right?
Yes.
Like Restless Price was a great example you shared. However, if this card was to get restricted, do you think that objective decks would still take it, which means the counter ability of the card would be reduced?
Yes and no. As I told you, I don't think it's as popular as Restless Price for reasons, because not all... Not all the old objective decks right now are holding objectives in their territory, necessarily. Like, my Greenwood Shred deck was holding objective in my opponent's territory. A lot of old objective right now are just basically old feature tokens, old cover access, old stuff like that. So it's not as necessary as before. In some decks, I think they do.
Right. Okay. I think that makes a lot of sense. So I guess my question to you, and you may have answered this already, but... Are we restricting?
If I have a vote, I guess so. But I don't think it's like, if this card doesn't get restricted, the meta is fucked and the game is not good. So probably yes, but it's not like, if it's not restricted, I'm not going to play this game anymore. It's not like that.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And actually, this conversation may have maybe made me a little softened. More soft on my stance. I still think the card is worthy of being restricted, and I probably will continue that thought process. However, it is an interesting conundrum, because by leaving it unrestricted, it gives the opportunity for warbands who are trying to deny their opponent scoring that ability to maybe get it early and then turn the tide, right? So, yeah. Well, very cool. I'm glad we talked about that. If you're not playing with Dark Inversion, I highly recommend you give it a go. It's really good, and it helps with a lot of things, like getting Skinks inspired and scoring supremacy. So let's jump into our main segment. So you did really well with Zarbag's Gits. It was probably the first time with them in a while now where we've seen them have a really high level finish outside of online.
Yeah, events. Online events have to be mandatory, because otherwise, like, Doppler is just going to kill us all.
Yeah, he's very good with Gits. I understand.
He played them like for 27 years straight, and he have like 93 version of his deck. So,
yep,
we have to mention him. And it's worth
100%. Yep. So we're not gonna take away. You know, we're not taking away from Diablerus's success online, but it's just nice to see. You know, because like in person events get a little bit more traction, I think, in visibility, and so it's really nice to see. You know, that older warbands still can swing it. And so my question, excuse me, to you is, when you were prepping for this mini clash, like, why did you think about Gits? Because I understand that for a while you were leaning Grimwatch, and then you decided to switch, or maybe that's not true. What was your thought process?
So my basically thought process, and it's something that I do all the times that I prep for a big event, it's like, what am I going to find? Because A, I don't want to play mirrors at all, if I can. And B, I think it's strategy-wise an important choice. So if I know that I can face a lot of similar decks or similar warbands, I want something that counters at all. And my guess was that I was going to face a lot of zombies, Exile Dead, and a lot of Shadestalkers. Shadeborn.
Yeah, it's really interesting you mentioned the Exiled Dead, because for a while everyone thought they were a bit of a boogeyman.
Yeah.
But I feel like their popularity has waned a little bit. Now, that being said, what do you think about Zarbag's Gits for our listeners was such a good counter against Exiled Dead?
So for the Exiled Dead, because probably people learned to play against them a bit. I think the biggest factor was I could consistently deny their big end phase scoring. That was it. Because sometimes you don't like avoid their massive mauling. They're going to come back at all. Sometimes Daintalos is not going to die at all, because maybe you have like one good shot and you miss. So I don't think you can like consistently counter that. But with Gits, you could consistently like hold these surges and hold this end phase scoring, because you can basically deploy the Gits, the Squeaks, over cover axes, and the cover axes that they want to grab early. So no Auras in the Dark, even Ever Downwards is going to be difficult for him. And if I manage to like hold more objective or feature tokens than him, then it's going to be good. And usually they want to be on cover axes instead of objectives. So if I try to do that, they're not going to counter my infestation. So I think that was the reason. Like, I tested a lot against a friend of mine that had the Exiled Dead deck that was like the boogeyman for us, because he usually beats our asses in sequence. Mm-hmm. So we tried to play against him and beat his deck. And the Gits was the one that I had most success with it. Like, I had the best record. I was like 7-2 against him. So I was like, okay, this is doable. And yeah, Grimwatch was like a 50-50 match. So but I wanted to give a shout out to Grimwatch, because I played them a lot like last year and in the COVID years online. So I wanted to give them like a last dance kind of standoff. So I wanted to bring them to Bookmans, and it pays off.
Right on. Now, one of the things that I see with that I had, you know, because I played the deck a couple times now to familiarize myself with it. And when I was playing against Exiled Dead, I found that like Snurk was a really big game changer.
It is.
For me. And I really want to take some time to talk about Snurk, because I feel like with a certain card pool that we have now, he is actually very reliable.
It is.
Right? Because you have, this card called Shrewdwits, right?
Shrewdwits.
For those of you unfamiliar. It makes your fighter an assassin, but that's not really relevant. Instead, what it does is it gives you a reaction. And after a scatter ability is resolved, you can push this fighter up to 2 hexes. And this is really good because it can trigger Offskirt's own scatter ability. So you can just move with him. And even if you end up in a weird spot, you can just push him onto an objective or next to another enemy fighter and threaten that, you know, devastation in the future. How often do you feel like that was a game changer for you in your Exile Dead matchups, but just matchups in general?
I think a lot. Not necessarily on the Exile Dead, but basically in all the matchups. It's worth mentioning that Obliterated makes this deck for the first time in the history of Gits for me, because I never found it that consistent. And now with Shrewdwits, I did. So that was worth mentioning. I think Snurk is usually pretty good to, in this moment, as you said, can be scary. It's also worth noticing that all the games that I lost is because, and then I lose badly, is because I can't score Obliterate. Because sometimes, doesn't matter what you do, Snurk goes whatever he wants, or your opponent does a sneaky early kill on him that you don't expect, or maybe just rolled poorly, and you're like your end is stuck in with that surge that you like have to spend resources for. So I'd like to play more passively, like holding in the back. And when I have cards to bring him back into the fight and score that objective, maybe I have more cards in my hand, maybe I have more resources in my hand. And maybe it's later in the game, so I don't need to score that surge that consistently because Gets have to inspire fast. That's the basic on them. Yeah. And so I usually tend to play him more safe than the other guys I saw play Gets. But sometimes, like, you put it up front, the exile that surround him, and you go spinning and he takes a couple of them out of action and jump back on a cover X. So yeah, that can be scary.
It's super scary because like three dodge post inspiration
on a cover, it's
on a cover. It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, one of the cool inclusions that you've added, and you know, I really got to understand why they're there, is you have two gambits in your deck, and this is surrounding the scatter mechanic, right? So, first we have barging forward, which I think is pretty explanatory. You just choose a fighter and you scatter five, and then if the chain gets interrupted, you stop, right? And then if you're a brawler, you do a damage, but he's not a brawler. But this is really cool because sometimes when I would start playing the game, I would barge forward just in hopes that I can just react with Shrewd Wits to get where I need to be.
Yeah.
Right? So I can either try to kill someone or just get on that objective and flip it.
It's a good push, really. It's not that bad, even if you don't play Shrewd Wits. I think it's worth considering. Like, sometimes you don't need to be exactly on the deck. Sometimes you just need to be, like, closer to that spot of the battlefield. Or just more towards that. So sometimes I use it, like, in another fighter to, like, make him able to make a charge. Because otherwise he couldn't reach. And maybe I can shrew it. Because you don't need to, like, barging forward with the same fighter that shrew it. So you can use the push and push another one with shrew it.
That's also very true. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, it can make it snare be like placed exactly when you want because you scatter five means that you can get pretty much close to when you want and push two, it's just popping off.
Yeah, I actually had a dream the other day where put on Shrewd Wits, barged forward, and then reacted off the barge forward, and then I played Not Lost.
Mm-hmm.
And so Not Lost is really interesting because, you know, you scatter five and then you hopefully that chain enters one or more empty hexes that contain a feature token. Otherwise, nothing happens, right?
Yeah.
But you still resolve the scatter.
Absolutely.
So oftentimes I wouldn't even put it in the direction of a feature token just so that I can, you know, I didn't land in a feature token and then react and then get to where I need to go.
You can do
it. Which is also really fun.
Yeah. Also Not Lost, worth mentioning, it's not a push, it's a place. So you can actually teleport through fighters or through blocked access and finish on a future token.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's really cool too. And so I think because Snark is now so reliable, as you mentioned, Obliterated makes into your surge list. And if you can get Obliterated early, you get the kill, you get Obliterated, your whole warband's inspired. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's very reliable. Now, I want to talk about your deck a little bit because I feel like, A, you mentioned, you know, your goal was to kind of combat Exile Dead and Shadeborn, but also this is like a very high scoring deck. I mean, you have 22 glory in here, and a lot of that has to do with infestation, but even without scoring infestation, that 17 glory is still a lot, especially when two of your surges require kills. So really you're at 19. So walk me through your process of taking some of these objectives. We get the understanding with Obliterated. You also have Impending Doom, Contest of Equals, Ever Downwards, In Cold Blood, and Sudden Revelation. Why did you pick those cards?
Okay, so that's a lot of questions, actually. So I think Gits are good when they can score surges fast. Because if you face like 9 fighters on 2 dodges or more right at the beginning of the game, that's a scary warband. That's a warband you don't want to fight. If you want to fight a warband that has like 1 dodge for half of the game, and most of them have 2 dodges, that's not as scary. Like, that's easy farming for your opponent. So Gits are really, really good when they have easy surges. So the surge list is the most important stuff. So you can see Contest of Equals was there because I didn't find like another as consistent surge as that and as easy. Impending Doom, I think, is going to be restricted sooner or later, especially with Exiled Dead because, you know, one activation, one glory. Doesn't need more than that. Sometimes your opponent scores it for you. And Sudden Revelation Ever Downwards writes by itself, like you scarry once or twice and you score it. No, not that big of a deal. In Cold Blood, it's a kill, and Obliterated, we talked about it a lot. Basically, In Cold Blood is the only that it's a bit unusual, but you find yourself having not being wounded most of the time, because if you're wounded, you're dead. So it's pretty easy on that. So my search list was like that. The end phase, I think right now there are like a lot of end phases cards, good end phase card for all objectives and special gets. And I started with Infestation. I thought it was doable, mostly because Worm in Darkness exists. That is a card that's worth mentioning and worth talking about. I think we have a game against you where you were like, yeah, if I do this attack, you don't score Infestation. I was like, no, doesn't matter, because Worm in Darkness makes me score it no matter what.
Right.
That is pretty awesome cards. And also, as I said, counters pretty good. The Shadeworn and the Exile Dead that wants cover access and not objective. So basically, they score it for me. And the other are pretty much self-explanatory. So Great Gains, Path to Victory, Dominant Position. I don't need to mean it. Path of Vindication, I saw people surprised by it. It like one glory and phase for them for scoring two objectives during the round. I think that's like as solid, as consistent I can find a one glory and phase. So I will take it all the time. So I don't see why not. And Supremacy was the other bigger one. And basically came from experience, because I found myself being in my territory a lot, and staying on cover axis is pretty good for them because they get boost on defense. Two dodges on cover is pretty good. So at the end of the round, just flip those covers and you're on Supremacy. So basically that's it. Also allows me to ditch some objectives that are not going to be scored. So for example, if I see an old objective deck, probably Infestation is not going to make it. So I can drop it and still have like a lot of glories, as you said. I'm not bounded to score everything.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And so with this objective list, you know, you clearly have that hold objective strategy set in place with the ability to counterattack as we'll go through the rest of your deck. One question that I always ask myself when building a Gitz deck, and I'm going to ask you right now, is did you think about Pure Carnage at all?
I did. Yeah, basically it was a Pure Carnage or Infestation or Supremacy. The difference is Pure Carnage is a third end phase, which is not as consistent as Infestation that can score on round one as on round three. And sometimes Infestation, well, it's a swing of the eight, it's more glory and whatever. If Pure Carnage wasn't round three only, probably doesn't make the cut anyway in this case, because sometimes you don't score it in round two, even if you try, because you just like one short. And against Exile Dead, it's not that good. They're coming back a lot.
That's fair. Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense when thinking about the meta and the Exiled Dead, I think, popularity at the time. Moving forward, I think, is this something that you're going to entertain now that their popularity has, you know, decreased a little bit, or for the same reasons, it's just not consistent enough for you?
Pure Carnage, you mean?
Yes.
I mean, Pure Carnage is going to make a good stack from time to time. It's sort of work. Good end phase are going to be there. Right now, I think, as I told you, there are some good ones that are unrestricted and available. And so right now it's not needed, but sometimes it will be needed and will make the cut.
Sure. Yeah. And I guess also sometimes when you draw it early and you have to like chuck it back in your deck, revealing that can be a bit of a disappointing feeling sometimes.
Yeah.
Right. So that makes sense. Okay, so let's go to your gambit. So you decide to go 10 and 10 for your power deck, which is great, you know, the more efficient way to do it. So some of your cards, pretty simple, you know, like Heated Instinct, Hypnotic Buzz, Center of Attention. That makes a lot of sense. You spend a restricted slot on Punching Up, and it's also, you know, very similar to its cousin, if you will, Inspired Attack. How often was that a game changer for you, and why do you recommend people to play that card when playing with lower wound warbands?
I think those cards combo really well with Gitz, because you basically play one of them and suddenly you have more accuracy and more damage in a warband that lacks both of them. But you put a weapon in them and you play one of those cards, both of those cards, and suddenly they're going to be scared. Like, I won't have a Moloch that can kill every fighter for the entire game, but I can make one single fighter that can make one powerful attack and wipe out one of your threats and then be done for it.
Yeah, What's the most damage you've ever done with a single Gitz attack?
7.
Oof. How'd you do that? I'm assuming Soultooth Dagger is involved with the crit.
It was. I think it was like the Silent Sword in No Man's Land.
Ooh.
Both punching up and inspired attack. And yeah, the basically everything else. Glory Seeker, Great Strength.
That is wild. I love that.
I think there was, yeah.
Yeah. And we'll get into the upgrades a bit.
Feral Symbiote too. Yeah, both of them.
Yeah. You've packed a lot of damage. If we're looking at this Gambit list, is there anything that you would have changed post-event?
Not really, no. I'm not sure if I... Probably the underused card is Center of Attention, because sometimes you don't find really a good spot for it, but sometimes just win you the game. Like my last match against the Vampires, it win me the game because it managed to pull two of their fighters off of two objectives in one single card. That was game. And so, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very powerful card. I remember on the episode with Benji, when we talked about Reapers, he thinks it's arguably the best card in the game.
Actually, yeah. I'm not so sure. A good point with Center of Attention, I don't remember who told me, probably was, or Zach or Davey, it's a feel-good card. Like, sometimes when you play it perfectly, it makes you feel so smart and so good with yourself that you just forget all the time that did nothing or did not so good or wasn't that powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. Okay, so just as a holistic view for those who may not have his deck or seen it before, Heated Instinct, Hypnotic Buzz, Punching Up, Center of Attention, Inspired Attack, Dark Sacrifice, Not Lost, Barging Forward, Dark Inversion, and Swarming Darkness, which I feel like Swarming Darkness, as you mentioned, and through experience as well, is a very, very good card. Yeah. Can win
I think was the best Gambit in my deck.
Right on. Going to your upgrades, I want to start with Driven by Envy, because I was pretty surprised when I saw this one. It makes sense when you think about it. But I would have almost just gone for, you know, another weapon upgrade. Why Driven by Envy?
So I think there's a balance point in weapon upgrades, because you really have like three fighters that don't have great attack profile, if you think about it. Zarbak is 3 Fury Cleave, 2 damage. The Squigirder, 3 Hammers, 2 damage. Squigs, 2 Hammers, 2 damage. Or when, if inspired, 3 Hammers, Cleave, 2 damage. Even the Prog, the Nether, is 3 Hammers. Mm. Like, sometimes you don't need that many weapon upgrades if they're not that good. Like, with Soulto Daggers... with the Emberbone weapons, that was a different story, because the weapons was worth by itself. It was basically a glory mechanism, a glory farming mechanism itself, rather than the killing mechanism. In this case, sometimes I just need, like, to put more damage on a fighter, and instead of changing his profile. Like, if Zarbak, instead of going from 3 Fury to damage, goes to 3 Hammers to damage, it's not that big of a change. So I'd rather have something else. Driven by Envy, I'm surprised how everybody asked me why Driven by Envy. Driven by Envy is a good card, people. Like, +1 move is a good card by itself. This adds +1 dice and cleave against the leader. Like, +1 dice cards, it's good.
No, I don't disagree at all. I just...
It baffles me that people see Driven by Envy and say, oh, why this card? Like, why not?
Well, how many leaders did you kill with Driven by Envy throughout the event?
Quite a lot, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah. And it's also, it's scary as fuck. Like, if you put it that, Dentalus is going to shit himself. That's +1 dice and cleave against my 1 shield? Yeah. That's scary.
Yeah, I forgot to make the link between Dantalos again. It makes sense.
And also, like, +1 move, it's really important. Like, sometimes they push yourself off and you have, like, I have +1 move. That makes me. Also yeah. Gets at, like, slow mobility. So extra speed does matter. Also, another thing I don't see stress enough. Right now, this game is more, like, in the center of the board. It's not like before where you have, like, sprawl and cover the entire length of the board. You don't need, like, +2 as much as you need +1 right now. +1 is just as valid. Not just as valid, but quite as valid as before.
Yeah, for 4-move warbands, I would agree, yeah. That's fair. And I forget that at the time, your two big concerns were Shadeborn and Exiled Dead. So both two very heavy leader-centric warbands. It makes a lot of sense. And I agree. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just asking.
No, I'm surprised why people ask. Like, why not? It's pretty good.
Yeah. Fair enough, you know. So looking at damage, we've got Feral Symbiote, Glory Seeker, Great Strength. All of that makes a lot of sense. We've got the Silent Sword and the Soultooth Dagger again. Make a lot of sense. Ferocious Bite, also probably one of the best upgrades in the game, if not the best at this point. Especially if you stick that on a Squig. You know, five hammer. Yeah. It's pretty nuts when inspired.
But even if you don't, I played a game, but probably was one against the Exile Dead. I popped that and then was like, yeah, punching up a Great Strength. That's it. That's four, like, no, that's six, five hammers, four damages.
Yeah.
Yeah, then he's going to die, but you're going to lose a much more important fight than I will lose.
Yeah. Yeah, the threat of all the damage that you have packed is very, very scary. Now, two more cards I really want to focus in on. Formidable Defense, Fighters of Quarry, you know, great synergy with Hated Instinct, plus one defense. And more often than not, you're probably going to stick this on a fighter whose attack actions don't matter to you.
Basically, was 90% of the time on Snurk.
Snurk, got it.
But sometimes you put it, like, on the Squig Herder, if it's on an important, a crucial objective. It's on two shields, on cover. It's not that big of a good target at that point.
That's fair. And even when he's inspired, he's still two smash because you take away one attacker. Exactly. It's still a pretty, decent profile. Yeah, I never thought of putting on Just Get. Very cool. And then lastly, Instinctive Shield. So this card is really interesting. I think super popular with the Mad Mob. But, you know, for those of you unfamiliar, you can put a shield counter on a fighter. If they're a wizard, they get two. And then after a fighter takes damage, you can react and take off a shield counter to reduce that damage by one or by as many shield counters you take, where X is the number of shield counters and damage.
Actually, you use that to heal yourself. Mm-hmm. So you can be like a one wound left, take like three damages or like two damages and remove those two.
Yep. So damage reduction, right? So
yeah, if one, it's after you have dealt damage. So you have to clearly remove wound tokens.
Mm-hmm.
To stun curve. But basically it's the same. It's an immediate heal or like a damage reduction card.
That's fair. Yeah, I see what you're saying with that. And so how often was this a card for you? Is this like a Snurk card? Because I think Zarbag, but then you don't really need to put it on Zarbag.
It's 50-50 what are your on Zarbag there? And Snurk. Okay. Sometimes people don't expect, like, Zarbag, it's on five wounds now, and it's not large. Is it worth investing that many resources on? Probably not. Sometimes it is on Snurk. Like, if Snurk gets some damage for accident, because it happens, and you put that in, I don't know, I just spend another resources to go to against the three dodge fighters. It's more a deterrent than an actual, like, effective card, but it's pretty effective, and on Zarbag it's huge. Like, every plus two wound card in the game was restricted for a reason.
Right. Makes a lot of sense. Okay. So that's a breakdown of your deck. And so what I really want to do now is, you know, take a listen at how your games went at the event. So just a really high level recap of who you played. Maybe if you don't remember your opponent's name, just a recap of the warband and how the games kind of went. All
right. So I faced the Sepulchre Guard in round one, the Exiled Dead in round two against the Spanish guy. I can't remember the name. Then I played the Kittershanks, the Clawback. I don't know if that's the correct name. I'm bad at names.
Kittershanks Clawback, yeah.
Okay. Against a Brazilian guy that was living in London. And then I played Michel Mora, is the only one I remember, that was playing the Vampires. The Crimson Court, yes, correct. And Michel was also a guy that I faced at the last Grand Clash. Both times, like, he was the number one on the rankings, and he faced me and he wasn't number one anymore. And all the times, he was like a super opponent, a really top notch guy to play against. Games were always that interesting. It, like, really shout out to him. I can't wait to play him again. And eventually, he's going to catch me and get my deserved revenge because I ruined his tournament again.
You're like the LeBron James against the Raptors.
Basically, yeah.
Just ends their playoff run every time.
Yeah, it also ended my tournament, yeah. To be honest, because it took a game for me.
Well, there you go. That's good. He got a little bit of revenge.
Yeah.
That's nice.
At the end of the tournament, say, yeah, sorry. So thank you for not letting me win this tournament. Say, well, thank you. You did the same. So, yeah. Actually, that's true.
That's funny. So in game one, the Sepulchral Guard, what was the – you won? So you went 2-0, 2-0, 2-0, 2-1. And the one loss was – you said Michelle? Yeah. Yeah. And so when you're playing against the Sepulchral Guard, what does that matchup feel like? I imagine at that point, Infestation and Claim – is it Claim the City for the
– Yeah, Claim the City.
At that point, is just moot?
So interesting thought. I didn't thought he was running Claim the City. I learned about it because he played like one of my friends in the last round and he scored on them. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know the guy had it. I added Infestation and I dropped Infestation both of the game because wasn't scorable. I don't have like the mobility to go counter his holding. I don't know. I think my deck was just better than him. For some reason, I had more pushes, I had more tricks. I ended with more objective more often. And when two old objective decks face each other, one is going to score and the other is not going to score because you counter their objectives at the same time. So it usually goes that way. They were like close game. There wasn't that blowouts. There wasn't easy game. I was like, yeah, if this is my first opponent, it's going to be like a difficult tournament. But I think I just had like more tricks. He played another thing in second round. So the first round, the first game was pretty much I was like expecting that more tricks. I scored more than him. In second game, like he plays the Warden right in front of me. Like first fight, I was like,
yeah,
I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm gonna try. So I charge with the Squig and a crit on defense.
Oof.
Okay, it's still there. Doesn't matter. I charge with another Squig and a crit on defense. Okay, it's going. And I was going to score something else during the time. So I packed like a good attack at the end of the round and like used a lot of stuff, like a confusion to pull him back and stuff like that to not make it reachable. So I went on the second round. I spent like 5 cards following the guys around because it was like center of attention to pull it off. And I was like barging forward to push the Squig off. And I finished like doing this enormous attack on him and killing him. It was like, I don't know why that was the thing. I don't know what the strategy was. It was really weird. And it paid off somehow because it was a powerful fighter up front. But don't do that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I imagine at that point he realized that you have more tricks than him and everything. So his goal is maybe to play more aggro.
Yeah.
And just kill you.
But, you know, if 2 hammers against 1 dodge are good attacks.
Yeah.
Like that game could have ended at like the second activation. If the dice were different.
Dice had rolled. Yeah, I definitely think he needs to be on 1 block, especially because he's carrying a shield, but that's a conversation.
Yeah, all this perhaps another day. Should be on 1 block because of the shield.
Most of them, yeah. Most of them are holding shields, so that makes sense. Okay, so pretty strong opening to the tournament. We get into second game. What's going on there?
So, Exile Dead, as I told you, I was prepped for them. Also, another shame on me. There was a card from that that's called Dominion of Death, which I talked about plenty. I don't remember in this podcast or again. I would say this is a good card for Skirmish, but I don't think it's good in a best of three format. Because once I just need to place like 1 fighter and no one starts, or you're not going to score it.
Right.
Shame on me, both of those games. The first game he got me, I didn't expect it. And second day, I absolutely know that he could score it. But I decided, if I don't counter it, I have more probability to score Infestation. So I didn't. He scored it, I scored Infestation. So good on me, but he played me twice for saying a card, you can score it twice on me, he did. So
nice. Well, I appreciate your ability to admit that.
Yeah. He made me some crow, so yes, I mean that.
So your plan just worked then? You were able to get to Daintelos early in both games, maybe? And
yeah, he also upset me in first round, which is something I want to do. You don't need to do that, because basically it slows you down on reaching me. It's not that easy. You cannot reach like multiple targets. That's something that's scary. like if they manage to pull like three attacks on three different fighters, they had the chance to wipe 1/3 of your warband in one activation. That's game over. Nobody is going to recover from that. But if right. it attacks one at a time, even if that's good accuracy, my fighters can die. They can die in all the games. Not that big of a deal. But I can like channel them and contest one single like cover X, which I did like in both games. And I said, I have a plenty of tricks. I have plenty of fighters to go back on the cover if I need to. So basically, I stole him out. Also, nice. Also I think it's worth mentioning, we had like to go twice to the tournament, to the judge, to discuss rules. And the experience was absolutely positive. Like, it doesn't mean, if you go to a judge, it doesn't mean that the game is going bad. I think he was a great opponent. He had legitimate doubts, so we went both times on that, and it was like super fun about it. And once was actually on me because I didn't remember the exact same score after our first game, and he was like, "Yeah, I told him to the TO," and I was like, "No, you didn't." And we went, and the TO confirmed, "No, you didn't." So we managed to get some scoring sometimes, but it was a fun player, and I want to give a shout out to him because.
Yeah, right on. I mean, and I completely appreciate the fact that you mentioned up why, you know, judges are so important. Like, TO spend a lot of time and energy, you know, to be there. And they're a resource. There's nothing wrong with ever calling a TO.
Yeah.
It's always the right thing to do.
I mean, again, if a game goes twice to the judge, can be some tension because it's a competitive event. It was super fun about it. It was super kind guy. So it doesn't need to be stressful. It can be just fun. Just fine to go to the TO and discuss something.
Right on. So at that point, you probably have lunch, right? Any beers you grabbed or anything? Or
it's England, so lunch was terrible. Sorry.
Oof, that wasn't me who said it. I'm just going to throw that out there for my English listeners. Were you grabbing any brews or anything at that point? Or
No, I don't think so. No.
No?
Okay. No.
Fair enough.
It's still morning, listen.
There you go. Okay, so then round three, we get into Klopak. I find Klopak to be a very interesting warband because in certain matchups, the dynamic can be so fascinating. In your opinion, did you have to play Zarbak differently in this matchup?
So I deployed Zarbak in the back, and it's the first time I played it. Usually it's my first front fighter because three wounds, two dodges, it's usually harder to kill than the others.
Right.
I put him in the back, and I would say, no matter what I do, this guy is going to inspire. I'm just going to slow down his inspiration. He never killed my Zarbak. He never managed to. He had to in the second game. His dice were horrible, so he missed it. But it was also the end of the game, so I don't think that would make a lot of difference. Worth mentioning, this guy was fairly inexperienced. I don't think it was... Probably was his first clash or his first major tournament. I think probably he did like just one tournament before that. And he went to round three undefeated because like he won, won his first and ties the second. But he also like he lost against me and lost badly, like by a lot. And I apologized to him a lot and he was super nice about it. Wasn't that obsessed about it. And then he won his last match. So even to that, he was undefeated beside one match against me. So shout out to him. And he did fantastic.
That's awesome.
It's going to be a problem in the future. If his first tournament is like that, it's going to.
Yeah, and he's playing Skittershanks.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
So
they're not necessarily the top dog in the
Also,
right
his
now,
dice were awful. Just horrible dice. And he was super chill about it and super fun about it. So.
Yeah, I mean, we've all been there with dice, right? Like sometimes a dice roll, an unlikely dice roll will win you a game. And sometimes a very likely dice roll will not work out and you lose a game.
It just missed all the attacks.
It happens.
Like in the first game against me, I don't think he managed to kill anyone. And I have 9 fighters.
Oh, wow. That is bad. Yeah. Jeez.
That is absolutely horrible. Like I crashed him and it was 100% also because of dice. And I think it's important that... Again, this was third round. He was undefeated. So it was at least competing. Not for victory because he tied, but to a good spot. And a game goes like that and he's still like smiling, having fun, having a laugh with me. So shout out to him. It's important to like keep your head in that mood.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a great lesson that you share is that, you know, ultimately we're playing a game. And so, you know, try to have fun with it. I know As anyone knows, I can be pretty intense when I play some competitive games.
Oh, yeah, me too. I think everybody can tilt and have like a bad mood day. And it was absolutely classy about it. So shout out to him.
Awesome. Love that. And then the last game is when you played Michelle. And so Vampires Gits is an interesting matchup because vampires have the propensity to kind of just run through the warband, you know, if they get some early hits. What was your thought process going into this match, and why did it end up going the way it did?
So, first thing is, I don't know which version of Crimson Curse is going to play. Because they can take, like, multiple strategies. They can have, like, full aggro. I was expecting full aggro. Because also he deployed fully aggro. I don't know if he was to inspire it. I don't know if he was going to be more bloodless. And it did. It did. It was bloodlust. And it was a flex deck. And I didn't expect that. Like, it was fully forward with his deployment. And he also scored, like, dominant position and the one for controlling all objectives in one territory from the warband. They have one on in faction warband. First game, it's my turn to complain about dice. Like, in 6 activations, I lost 8 gits. 8 fighters. I was left with only Zarbak, including like a sighting attack from Velas with 2 hammers that wiped 3 fighters, including Snirk on a cover X. So sometimes it goes like that. Game went absolutely south. I mismanaged some plays in first round when he took advantage, and then I could not recover, and it was like he wiped me. I think we ended the 3 game match probably, if not like positive, even like negative glory differential for me, or just close glory differential, because it wiped me that bad. And I joked to him because I had like borrowed dice from a friend of mine, and I said, I have to change dice because they aren't working. And he was like, okay, if they're going to start rolling out, I'm going to throw it for you. So he made me change dice, and my dice were screaming out at the point.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
That was like a complete flip on the top, and the dice on my side on the second game. But more interesting about, I think he recognized that basically the difference in our attacks and strategies, if I manage to score infestation, I won. If I don't, I don't win. I don't win. Because basically he can farm glory off of my gets. He had some way to do it. If I score infestation, because the match is like that. And every single game went about 5 glory or stuff like that. Basically, infestation was the tiebreaker of the game.
That's incredible. And so how difficult was it for you to score infestation in those games?
It was pretty difficult because, I tell you, it was a flex deck. Yeah, Dark Inversion and Forbidden Darkness. So,
oh, nice.
My tricks aren't like that exclusive anymore. And it didn't have like that many pushes, but his Crimson Core are incredibly accurate. They are tough to beat, and they have good cards, good mobility cards. That was tough. As I said, like the last game, he was on 2 objectives and I was on 2. And I managed to pull him off of 2 because of Center of Attention. So at that point, even if you like one push, I have more pushes than him. So I ended up scoring infestation because of that.
Wow. Right on. So very tight game 4. And honestly, like, it sounded like everyone there, you know, was pretty on top of their game. I mean, you had, you know, 4 players, all of the top 4 technically didn't lose a match.
Yeah.
With only you and I believe it was it Baconborn?
No. It was Gutsworn Gamer. Martin.
Gutsworn Gamer. Martin. Yeah. Okay. Martin, who played the Lizards.
Yeah.
Starblood Stalkers. And had the same record as me with 4th. I'm sure that tiebreaker was glory differential or something.
It was glory differential. Also worth noticing, Martin did the exact same results as I did for the entire weekend. He went undefeated on Bugman's and lost only 1 match. And he ended all the times behind me. But I want to give a shout out to him. Like, if I get some this tour of, show us how to teach the game, he should do it exactly as me. Also, he was playing the Truth Seekers on the first day, so probably more interesting than me, what he has to say.
Yeah, I've been meaning to reach out to him to talk to him about Truth Seekers, because I think they are a very interesting warband, and so I'll probably do that in the future. But Yeah. So overall, you know, we have Rippas, Ideneth, Zarbag, and Stalkers, you know, going undefeated, you know, on the day with, you know, some certain tiebreakers that are involved there. Do you feel like, are you happy with your performance? You know,
I mean, ultimately, absolutely. If you told me before the event that you're going to lose one match throughout the entire weekend, sign me off.
Yeah, that's fair.
They also like gave glass to the first three, so I managed to grab that too.
Oh, nice! Hell yeah, that's cool.
I have some hardware.
Yeah, they were doing that at Adepticon as well. So
okay,
yeah, that's cool. Now, in terms of the meta, you know, so we've talked about your event. We talked about the War Wizard really well. Where do you think the meta stands right now? You know, I love talking about the meta. I love talking about the current game. What are your thoughts on it?
So if you asked me this same question 2 months ago, I was going to tell you everybody has to deal with Exiled Death because they are menace. Mm-hmm. They can stomp you right now. I still think right now, they're somewhat similar to Moloch's Watt at the time. They can be crushingly heartbreaking against a new player and someone who doesn't know how to play against them. But now that all the community knows how to play against them, it's hard to consistently win with them. It's not that easy. Like, they still can win. They're not as dicey as Moloch, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But they can, like, go south in two different ways. Like, they can wipe you out and you can wipe them out. Like, they can be both of those things. If I have to choose, like, one warband that is top of the meta right now, I think it's the Dipkin. Dipkin has insane accuracy, super fast, great surges, great end phase scoring. So I think they are pretty far ahead of each other. They're not that far ahead. They're going to automatically win every tournament. But if I have to pick like a S tier warband, I think it's them. It's worth mentioning that the distance between the S tier and the A tier is not that huge. Like the A tier warbands, I think Gits are there. The Exile that they can be there too. The Shadeborn can be there. They're not that far away from Dipkin.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely would agree with you with Dipkin. I think they're always going to be a warband that do really well, especially with the current card pool. And we're like, I feel like they could maybe do with one more restriction, but we don't have to get nitty gritty. But I think Cloud of Midnight is pretty bonkers in a lot of situations.
Yeah, they have access to a lot of good stuff. Like for the one I don't see played that often, but it's like Honed Claw, Honed Instinct. That's like
the one where you get a support
innate support innate. With the ability you have to place the fish wherever you want. That's bonkers.
Yeah, it's a good card. It's a very good card.
Yeah.
What about Rippas? You know, Rippas did really well, and I really liked this guy's Rippas deck. He, you know, took cards like Conquered Land into the fray and Brave Advance because most people nowadays, the strategy is to not hit Rippa. So you can pretty much place Rippa wherever you want to. He'll avoid you like the plague. And because he's not attacking Rippa, you score your cards. If they do decide to attack Rippa, you've inspired your warband.
Yeah.
And then you can just start rolling dice.
That was smart.
What do you think about that deck?
So I played against the guy on the day before. He was playing Moloch. They told me like he was playing Rippa for basically 3 years straight. So he was keen focused on them for the whole time and experienced with them. I do think that's required. Like I don't think you can take a good Rippa deck and do automatically good. Like you need to learn Rippas. You need to learn a different matchups approach and deployment and stuff like that. Rippa are always are going to be a fun warband and a good warband because they have great warband cards. And just that's it. They don't have like absurd stats. Especially, I think maybe the spear can have like one fury more or one damage more. I always find them a bit lacking in that regard, but they do great anyway. So maybe not that needed at this point. But they do really great. They can be scary, but they're not like an easy win. They have high ceiling, but the floor is not that low.
Yeah, that's fair.
For having fun, the floor is super low. Like,
yeah.
Play them, you're going to have fun. You're going to roll like 12,000 attacks, and when the bite lands, it feels you amazing.
Yes, completely agree. So In addition to those warbands we've discussed, are there any other warbands that you'd like to talk about? I mean, I would love to get your opinion on Shadeborn, actually, because I was really high on Shadeborn in the beginning, but ultimately I moved away from them because if you want to score your end phase cards, which revolve around being cover, then you kind of have to give up your, you know, the ability to counter your opponent, because if you flip, then you're not getting your end phase. And then, you could just play the objective game instead, but then I think there you lose a lot of intrinsic synergy with them. What are your thoughts on Shadeborn?
So I played Shadeborn a bit when they came out. I took inspiration from your deck and went from there. And then I stopped because I need to practice for the Clash, and they aren't going to have... I consider them to for the Bookmans, but went for the Grimwatch instead. If I have to make a bold prediction of them, I think if I'm going to do another deck for them, it's probably a deck that doesn't have six surges, but lower than them. Because I think their surges are not that impactful and not that easy. Like, some of them are, but not really that many, and their end phases are pretty good and pretty safe. Like, sometimes I had some good round one when I just chill back, have all my fighter on cover. Maybe if you come over, I can make a couple of ping attacks to inspire or do something like that, and then score big and have a lot of upgrades. And sometimes surges put you in bad position because maybe you have to delve something in your opponent's territory, or you have to make a kill or something like that. So probably I don't think the surge pull is as good for them as it is for other warbands. But I think they're going to be intimidating. They have some crazy good matchups because their ability to alpha strike a good fighter is immense. Mm-hmm. And they have some matchups which are worse. I think Gits are a bad matchup for them because who do you alpha strike, really? There are nine fighters you don't have to prioritize something. You killed one of them, there are eight more. So probably you can build... If I have to make another prediction, if Mike was going to play again, he would have made like a nasty passive Shadeborn deck that stand in the back, score a lot of glory, and when you reach to the MA, one shot you with tricks.
That's a hot take, and I appreciate that actually, because I'm always trying to figure out how to make them work, and so I'll take a look at seeing maybe if six surges isn't the right move. Because I've never really thought about not taking six surges, you know.
Yeah, it's just so intrinsically part. At this point.
Yeah, so that is very, very interesting. Have you seen anyone have success with Buccaneers at all?
No, I don't think it's possible.
Fair enough.
I think so, they're pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean they are, unfortunately. What about Cunning Crew? I know that you think they're pretty decent.
I think they're great. I think they were far better at the beginning of the season because they were more on support stuff. More cards rewarded having support than right now. That is more about being in cover, delving, and stuff like that. They do that a bit worse. They're probably going to be a good weapon at the beginning of seasons when their generic card pool is limited, not restricted. Because they have good cards and good faction and whatever. These stats are pretty good. Actually, the fact that the leader is large is a big detrimental to them. Was a big blow to them.
You think?
Yeah, that is a big fighter that you want to like place forward, and now it deals a lot of glory to you. Like, it gives you two glory, and it's not that defensive about it. They have that illusion, which is pretty good, the one that gives you like plus one defense. Besides that,
yep.
I think that blows a bit for them.
That's fair. Okay, well, I think we've pretty much covered the meta at this point, unless there's some warbands that you wanted to mention.
I think Russia is worth mentioning.
Yeah. What do you think about their beta rule?
I think they suck. Like, they did them dirty. Beta rule crushed them.
Yeah.
So I kind of see that they want to sometime like limit their power because they can be intimidating. Their stats are amazing. Basically, right now, all their good surges are restricted and slow because you don't hold objective until after the power step and stuff like that. So that's a big stuff. And also, their beta rules crush them because basically you have to make two full rounds at about swinging at two fury, and you have to charge at two fury swinging. Those are bad attacks. Like, they were powerful because you don't need to commit charges early on. You need to, like, be cunning about it, do some pushes, get some early attacks, and when you have two, then you can strategize your targets. You can do the massive damage attack, you can do the extremely accurate attack. Right now, yeah, just do three charges, hope your dice are odd, because you're going to roll two fury and that's it. And maybe in third round you have one good attack, but not that good because you have like two counter stops. So better rules basically dust them off. I hope they don't become effective.
Yeah, I definitely agree that I think the beta rule was an overreaction. I think the changes to large in itself were pretty powerful to the warband, gave them a significant handicap against them. And you're right. I think the beta rule is a tad too oppressive for the fans of the warband. But I also think that they've had their time in the sun, so I can understand why you might want to prematurely sunset the warband. But that being said, you know, every warband should be playable to the best degree possible within balance. So, okay. I'm going to ask you a couple questions now that's more fun, just because I want to kind of bring some, I don't know, just have some spice in the episode. Right. So, in your opinion right now, what's the worst warband in the game?
There are some good candidates for it. Buccaneer is my first choice.
Really?
It's really bad. Man, it's really bad.
You think they're worse than Iron Skulls?
Iron Skull was my second choice. But I also saw I think it's a patron of you that didn't.
Yeah, or Tim Greaves. He's the man.
Yeah. It is fantastic both days at the event. So maybe they're playable. I didn't know that they're playable.
He's been playing them nonstop since they released, though.
That's dedication. Yeah, like, I was on the orcs at the beginning, and then I saw Magore. I was like, wait, those guys hit better and harder? Stop with
it. He saw Magore's and was like, nah.
Yeah.
Too meta.
Yeah, that's dedication. I respect that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough. That's a hot take. What's your favorite season of the game?
Interesting. I think Night.
Let's do two. Season in itself, without... like just warbands and cards that released within the season first before we talk about metas.
I think Night Vault.
Yeah, same. Night Vault was the best.
I think probably I love all of the warbands. Besides Molog, it was like a sour note.
Yeah, I hate Molog, but it was also fun to like try to beat Molog to a certain extent. But
all the warbands like are character wise top notch, fun to play, really distinct, different play styles. I do love them.
And the miniatures aged pretty well, I think, for the most part. So, all right, favorite meta of the game.
Okay. I think I have two. So, the first one was after the very first fart list.
Oh, okay. The one where everything was restricted pretty much.
Yeah, but you also had like five restricted slots.
Yeah, we had five restricted slots at the
time. That was a lot, but I think that was interesting because suddenly you have to redo all your decks and you have to reconsider everything basically, and you started to do deck building differently, like the Scar is worth more than this and stuff like that. That was really fun, and a lot of stuff was becoming playable again because the moment before, I think pretty much Curse Breakers and Thorns polarized everything. So that was absolutely fun. The other one is, man, this is tough. I'm going with the Power Unbound meta.
Dude, me too. That's my favorite meta.
It's basically a tie with the Beastgrave after the nerf about the Hrothgarn, because Hrothgarn was like stomping everyone and was not fun to play against. And I think that far list like nailed everything exceptionally well. It was like super different made meta. But I don't know. Power Unbound bring a lot of overpowered cards. And the meta suddenly was... everything was super powerful.
Yeah, it was great, dude. Like, the thing is that, you know, Curse Breakers, you know, dominated. And then, you know, and Thorns, and then Profiteers, and then Guardians. But then now you had this meta where they're all still really strong. but then also Zarbags was up there. Godsworn were doing really well. Molag has always been great. So
Molag with Upper
Hand. Everything was good.
Everything was great.
You know, it was just a lot at that time. I felt like a lot of it had to do with player skill.
Yeah, I won
every warband could do crazy.
I won two tournaments in that time frame with Ilthari's Guardians. Was like an aggro flex deck. In one tournament, I beat 3 Curse Breakers in a row. That was like, I think, my peak performance ever in this game.
Peak. Yeah, that's awesome. Hell yeah, I love that. That's actually not an easy matchup. And I guess what we're at, what this episode has kind of turned into towards the end is like essentially, I don't know if you remember in Warband Wisdom, but you did those rapid fire questions. You remember when you did like the episode with us where we like did a breakdown on the Thorns?
Yeah, I think? Yeah, I was with Thorns, yes.
And towards the end, Jonathan kind of hit you with some rapid fire questions.
Yeah, that was some long time ago, man.
It was a long time ago. Yeah. I'm going to pretty much just continue to do that here, but I'm going to give you like 5 seconds per answer or question.
Let's try that.
Favorite fighter in the game?
Grunden. He has a big axe. What do you want more than that?
You know, the lore in Grunden is that he killed an orc and took the orc's axe, but he lost his eye in the process.
I mean, now that I know that, it's Grunden twice.
Even better. I love that. Favorite warband to play in general? I don't know if we've answered that, but of all time, your favorite warband?
I think Grimwatch at this point.
Grimwatch. Okay. What does that say about you as a person?
I'm a terrible person and you'd be ashamed to be my friend.
I love being your friend. I am not ashamed. If you could bring any card from Season 1 back to Championship format, what would it be?
Great Concussion.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Okay.
No, wait. I take it back. Ready for Action. I want it again.
I love that card so much. Yeah, I agree with you too. What do you think about illusions?
I think they're fun. I think they're balanced.
Right on. Is there a model that you really loved painting?
A single one?
Single miniature.
Single miniature.
Doesn't have to be Warhammer related.
Okay. Probably the Fire Giant from Rage was a game from Asmodee.
Oh, you sent that in our Patreon.
That was super fun.
That was cool. Yeah, super cool. Who is your least favorite fighter in the game?
Least favorite fighter? I think it's Flash. No, it's Bald.
Really?
The one with the big arm.
Oh, he's Coil.
Coil.
Yeah. Because he hits at two
damage, man. Even stagger at 3.
It looks like he's got an orc arm stitched to
him.
That's why it's big and green.
Well, basically, you hit me with that bolt that staggered me. Why is that 3 damage right now?
Yeah, that's fair. Makes a lot of sense. What kind of warband would you like to see in the future? This doesn't have to be like aesthetic related if you don't want it to be. It can be mechanics, faction, model count even. What do you want to see?
I think it's a long time until we saw like an all objective warband. So I want to see another one.
Do you not consider... I'm trying to think. Were there any holds? Starbuck Stalker is pretty recent.
Basically, right? They're the last one. And they're not like
they're the last
that one. Far onto the old objective.
So you want like pure hold
objective? Yeah, something like that.
Okay. Do you think a 2-man warband would be cool and balanced?
No.
No, fair enough. Do you think they'll ever make a warband with more than 9 fighters?
I hope so. I'm going to play that. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, me neither. If you could change one thing about any warband in the game, what would you change and why?
I want to be polite and say I want the Gitz inspiration to be changeable depending on the meta. Like, if they have good surges, they inspire at 5. They have bad surges, they inspire 2. If their surges are quite there, they inspire 3. So they don't become as oppressive as they are sometimes. Because people don't have fun playing against Gitz. I have a lot of fun playing Gitz. I want people to have fun playing against me.
Yeah. Okay, if you had to torture one of your friends in playing a warband that they never wanted to play at a Grand Clash, what would you make them play?
Khaivgar Ravagers.
Okay. I feel like Ravagers did well recently. Did they not in an event?
So. And probably was like a Rivals deck. And I don't know what happened there.
I think it was Rivals. I think they won the Alberta Clash Rivals event.
I mean, Rivals is a bit more like Vegas. Like, what happens if Rivals stay in Rivals? Don't mention.
What is what's actually a great next question? What is your thoughts on Rivals?
I think it's great for the game to bring new players in, but trust me, try Championship. I think it's more fun.
If events started becoming Rivals in the future, would you still play Underworlds?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I'm not sure, because I do like the deck building part. So Rivals Plus does something that's quite there, but I don't think it's that there enough.
Doesn't scratch the same
edge. Yeah. Also, how many Warband or Skirmish game where you don't like make the list and you don't make the deck are there?
A lot, I think, right?
Really? You
Warcry.
You at least make the list of your warband. You choose the fighters.
That's fair. You choose their weapons, I guess, or the fighters. Yeah. Even Kill Team, I guess you build your deck or your objectives, if you will. That's fair. But Rivals Plus kind of does that, right? You just limit it a little bit?
Yeah, a little bit. Probably my sweet spot is a bit more deck building shenanigans than that.
Yeah. I feel like this is the only Warhammer game that allows us, or Games Workshop game rather, that allows us to really get into that deck building aspect, which is something I thought they were missing for a while, which is why I think everyone enjoys Underworld so much. Have you ever played Kill Team or Warcraft?
I tried a demo for both of them, 8 of them.
Fair enough. Did you try the new Kill Team edition?
Not the new one, the old one.
Oh, the old one wasn't too good from my understanding. Okay, and if you could switch any two leadership, like leaders in the game for a warband, what would it be?
For what reason? Whatever reason?
There's whatever reason. You can just switch a leader's fighter stats and their abilities with another fighter and leader from another warband.
Okay. I want like Moloch in the Gits because I want to see the word burn.
You are a monster. Yeah. Nick, you are truly a monster.
I mean, I want 9 fighters and one with 7 wounds. That would be hilarious.
Oh, God.
That would...
Well... That was interesting. Well, thanks for playing the rapid fire round. I appreciate it. What I really want to do is kind of bring the topic a little bit back to the Gits, just as an ending before we do our outro here. If you had to give 5 pieces of advice to anyone who's interested in playing Zargaz Gits in the current meta, what would those 5 pieces of advice be in no particular order?
Okay. First advice, be careful with Snurk. Like, don't overcommit Snurk too easy, too fast, because you can lose him early and ruin your game. Be brave and aggressive with the Squigs. Like, move them, try to sacrifice them. Your opponent is going to try to ignore them. If he does, retaliate. So use your Squig with bravery. Put your best fighter up front and your weaker one in the back. They can hold objectives and they don't need to be, like, a danger as soon as the game starts. Try to prioritize inspiration as much as you can and try to eliminate the threat if you have to make an attack. Don't make attacks just for the sake of it.
Those are really good pieces of advice. Awesome. And if someone can't get their hands on Zarbag's Gits, right, because we're seeing that lately where it's harder to get open warbands, what's a good secondary warband that you could recommend that's probably a little bit more obtainable?
I don't know if the support card is obtainable, but it. I think the Stalkers are somewhat similar in some of the mechanics. They're not quite like the Simic, but they are. I think they can be fun and they're easy to obtain, at least, and they can be somewhat similar in the playstyle and some tricks.
Okay, cool. Well, I really appreciate your time today on the episode. I think we kind of covered a bunch of topics, you know, but I really like that we broke down your deck for Zarbag's Gits. We talked about their strengths, their weaknesses, and your matchups, which is really cool, and advice for newer players. So mission accomplished there. Everything else was just gravy, on top. Nick, if people want to ask you questions and reach out to you and talk to you as a person, where can they reach out?
The easiest way is on Discord. So you find me at Nick Ramon on Discord and a bunch of numbers, which I don't remember, but I'm basically in all the Underworld servers that I know of. So...
Yeah.
You can find me there.
Nick Ramone is your name on all platforms?
Yeah, it is.
Gotcha. Okay. Is there anything that you would like to talk about or share or just mention before we end the outro?
I made a shout out to a lot of people, to Martin again, because he did fantastic and wasn't recognized as much as I did, and you deserve that. Michelle, again, can't wait to play you again, and maybe you'll get your revenge. I hope not. And my team is always amazing. They organize a bunch of the stuff. They basically are carrying my local scene, and they deserve all the credit. So Team Cavalli, thank you.
Right on. Shout out Team Cavalli, the horse pros.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, all right, everyone. Well, thank you again, Nick, for your time today. That's going to be it for this episode. If you have any feedback, questions, comments, or concerns, please let it know at any of our social media platforms. You can find us generally at Path to Glory on Twitter, Facebook, and we even have our own Discord. So come check us out. We have a general public section as well. I'd also like to give a big shout out to our patrons. Shout out to everyone who supports this podcast. If you're interested in supporting this podcast monetarily, please check us out at patreon.com/PathToGlory. Other than that, thank you again, Nick, for having us. And as always,
thanks, man.
I want to wish everyone the best of luck on your path to glory.